I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 759, a haunting...
Not in Connecticut?
Sure. I know.
Haunting of Hill House or Hell House. Yeah. Those are two different things.
I kept thinking when I would see just the title on upcoming releases that it was like... a sequel to something like that. I didn't connect it it's another in the Kenneth Branagh Agatha Christie series.
The sequel is Haunting in Connecticut 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. That's what it's called.
Totally. Why would you want to leave Connecticut? They have great tax incentives.
That first one's not bad.
I was just going to say it's a different title. So, you know, it's not a book. The title isn't an Agatha Christie book.
Right.
So you've not heard of it.
And honestly,
is that right?
Yeah. The book was called Halloween Party.
Oh.
And honestly, I don't know if I'd ever heard of Halloween Party. I'm not a big Agatha Christie fan.
Sure.
I've read, I think, two of her books.
You're more of a Clouseau man.
Yes. And, but I read
Murder
on the Orient Express, and I read whatever the one that.
And then there were none.
That's what they call it now.
They can't call it the other one.
You can't call it either of the other ones.
Which one?
Well, so it was called something offensive.
Yes.
And they changed the name to something that was also offensive.
Are you talking about Agatha Christie movie?
Yeah, so we watched it. It was the second one.
Yeah, so...
Oh, they changed the title?
So what we now call And Then There Was None was originally called Ten Little... N-words.
Yes.
And then they changed the name of it because that's offensive.
Correct.
They changed it to 10 Little Indians.
Yes.
Right.
And because it's
and
the
they
base
changed
on,
it like, again.
And then they changed it to, we're not going to name any people in this at all.
Good idea. Can I tell you, I don't know what the title of that second movie is. I could not tell you the title for the life of me. Death on the Nile. Okay, because
yeah.
I know the first one, obviously, and then I was totally blanking on.
So I read that, and I read Murder on the Orient Express, and it was just like, I don't know. I know she's legendary, but it's just something about the writing style. Like my brain just kind of glosses over, and all of a sudden I've read three pages and retained none of it. That's why people can't figure out the mysteries.
I gotta tell you, that's like reading Michael Crichton.
I've never
sometimes he gets like in Jurassic Park, he gets into the science. And I was like,
never read a Michael Crichton book for that reason. Same with Tom Clancy.
Oh, sure.
I like those Jurassic Park books. I've read both.
I think
those.
One and two, I think both of them are really good.
They really,
but they do, like, there are like chunks of that. It's almost like, I remember reading,
like, Tom Clancy about military books.
Yeah. We're like, hey.
Well, Hunt for Red October, yeah, he famously got in trouble because he had read all the publicly
declassified stuff
and kind of made assumptions that connected dots, and all of a sudden he
the feds are like,
gets a knock on this door, like, you know, he's like, I just guessed correctly.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Sure you did, buddy. Yeah. Sure you did,
but the,
buddy.
The is it Stieg Larsson? Is that who wrote The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a thing that they've cut out of the movie where they get into, so you know the in the beginning, Mikael Blomkvist is getting sued, right, for defamation of character. Mm-hmm. They get into, like, how he got the information and, like, the lawsuit and the ins and outs of the lawsuit. And, boy, that is not fun to read. It is very
boring. Which is
boring.
Weird because people, like, went crazy for that book. So you think if there was something that dry up front, they wouldn't have gone
crazy. I think
crazy
they
for
went
it.
Crazy for the book post-miniseries. I think that miniseries came out.
Oh, really?
And I think so. And then the book sales went up. And then they're like, Fincher's like, I'll do it.
I wish they. I thought the Fincher remake was really good. Man. I wish they would have kept going with those.
They did. I'm serious.
They made a second one.
Yeah, there's with
but now with Fincher,
Claire.
They tried to make. I mean, and nobody cared.
No,
and
then I meant David Fincher. Like, oh, keep doing his thing with it.
Yeah.
They did a prequel or something, right? Didn't they do like?
I thought
where
it was like
it
a, no. I think it was.
Something?
Well, no. This was like it would have been. It's so confusing. There's three movies, right? There's three original movies, three original books, and then there's a fourth book.
Yeah, and the original movies are like, what, Swedish or something?
Yeah. And if you find them,
they're really good.
Those things are like 4 hours long a piece.
Yeah.
Like
they're really good.
Yeah, they are very good.
But that first one, I think, was a really good remake.
It's a great detective story.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really well done, but the Americans, us, didn't do The Girl Who Played with Fire and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. They jumped right to like The Girl in the Spider Web, which is post everything that happens.
Yeah.
So
they like found it in a drawer and somebody finished it.
Yes.
Right. And now they just have ghostwriters doing them because they've made more.
Oh, have they?
They're kept going.
Yeah. It was too much money on the table.
I knew he didn't finish the fourth one and someone else finished it for him. But,
yeah.
But
yeah.
That's what, but like, yeah. Why?
Because the story there is so the woman he was
involved with.
Yeah, they weren't married, but they had been together forever.
Yeah.
And she was like, he does not want anything published after his death. If he didn't finish it, he doesn't want to publish. But because they weren't married, his parents, because they didn't have kids, his parents ended up getting the rights, and they were like,
oh, he would like these published, please.
They were like, well, this makes up for the fact that we don't have a 401k in Sweden whatever. And so it all ended up coming out. And then now I think they just have ghostwriters writing them. Well, I mean, obviously he's not writing them, but they're still putting them out. Yeah.
He's like Tupac. They just keep finding stuff.
Yeah.
So Spirit of Vengeance, baby.
Now I'm like, want to go down the rabbit hole of like, how many of those books were?
Oh, we only got 60 minutes here, so
no, we're good. We got 54. We got enough time.
But I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Before we jump in, quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, IR, TuneIn, wherever you find a podcast. You can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. Super helpful. Good for the egos. More often than not. and it helps people who come along after you. And of course, it feeds the algorithm.
That's right.
Which is our God.
That's right.
So you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's called the League of Show Shares. We're hoping you will share an episode just to get the word out. So we're not doing this for no reason. And people who were kind enough to share an episode last week include Librarian Cynthia, Ralph Tribble, Phil Timon, Richard Krotzer, Chris Valls, Tammy Lynn Powers, Betts, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Magic Man, Tom Dowdy, Matt Gonzalez, Travis Tewitt, Julianne Jordan, Dissect That Film, Taylor Ward, Christopher Rex, David Rojas, Invasion of the Remake, The Film Bee, Geek to Me Radio, Ryan Terry, NostalgiaCast, The Real Pete, or should I say Pete?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a few more.
Binge Movies, Ronnie Castle, Feel and Film, In Session Film, and Matt Naglia. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. Also, don't forget we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and We love you long time.
And as soon as my life gets a little less hectic.
So never.
Correct.
Yeah.
We'll get back. We got some ready to go.
Yeah.
But we're going to, we'll finish up.
Yeah, we had a little, the last one was supposed to be up last week and there was a little audio snafu, so it's going to be up.
We accidentally turned Joe's mic on.
There was an accident. Yeah, we turned it on?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It was a shame. We like to let Joe play, you know, he plays along.
Right,
true. That he's getting recorded.
Yeah.
This time, it all mixed together and there's nothing I could salvage.
Like when I sang on stage with Poison, but the mic was disconnected.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Oh.
When I was a DJ a million years ago in the late 90s.
And they gave you a mic?
Well, they gave the staff a mic and we were all on there
I don't know what the
party
is.
Song.
Their anthem.
Yeah, and so I think the Kiss cover that they do.
Oh, is that a Kiss cover?
I think they do. Yeah, it's a Kiss cover. I thought anyway.
Yeah.
So we were on stage for that, but I did steal one of CeCe DeVille's picks.
Oh, that's nice.
One of the guys in the office was like, "If you get a pick," and I'm like, "I'm not going to ask them for a pick." And then I'm standing on stage, and they're all, you know how they tape them, on the mic stand, and I was like, "Oh, I'm right here. Screw it. Take a pick for this dude." I'm like, I wasn't going to go out of my way, but I'm like, I'm literally on stage with Poison, and here are all the picks. Okay,
all right.
He's not going to miss one.
Yeah, right. You know? He doesn't even know how he has
it's
no
the,
idea.
It's
how
the second to last song of the set. Like
he's already checked out to the bus.
He doesn't need eight more picks for one song. Not even CeCe DeVille is that bad of a guitarist. So, but
he just grind him down on a solo.
Yeah,
he's like, oh no,
now he's got to play with his fingers for real.
Yeah, like he's Al Demiola.
That's right.
So, what else do I have left to say? Oh yeah, and these are all on YouTube. You should go watch them. There you go.
Cool.
So, there's all that. Let's dig in.
This is a weird movie.
It is weird. You know what? It really is filmed strangely.
I thought the same thing.
Okay, so I'm of two minds of this, and I'm trying to figure it out because usually I like watching a movie with really cool shots. I mean, if you go back to movies like Citizen Kane, even, you're like, wow, these are some really amazing shots they're doing. They're interesting. They're doing it from different angles and all this stuff. This movie is like trying to do all this different stuff, but it's way too frequently where it's not like, oh, here's an interesting shot thrown in here. It's like cut to a weird hallway shot, cut to a weird fisheye close-up shot.
Cut to a weird Dutch angle for no reason.
Yeah, it's like they're trying so hard to do weird shots. And then it doesn't look very good, but they're doing weird shots. And then some of them look like they're filmed on a cell phone, which isn't like a cool Soderbergh compliment. It's like, it just looks like a weird old TV miniseries. Like, not in a good way, but.
So, did Brenna direct all three of these?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And so here's what I think happened. The first one they made for like $55 million.
On the Orient Express.
And
diminishing returns.
And then it was really popular.
Yeah.
It made like $350 million.
Huge cast.
Yeah. And so they gave it more money. And the next one was like $100 million. But then they had to edit that thing within an inch of its life because Army Hammer.
COVID.
And so it underperformed. And so they slashed the budget on this one.
Here you go, Kenny.
Back down to $60 million. And if you think about it, this movie only has one set. They found this really weird looking mansion and they filmed the whole thing there.
For sure.
And so I think what you're responding to is I think he's doing everything he can.
Right.
That's probably true.
To hide the fact that the budget was slashed and he's got one location to work with.
I love chamber pieces. Like that can be a really cool thing, but this did not work for me.
And isn't
I like this movie a lot. I think it's the best one of the three.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah,
holy
I do.
God. I think they do a really fun I think they do a really fun job with. Is it supernatural? Is it not supernatural?
I love that aspect.
Where are we?
What I really liked about this movie was, compared to the first two, is I liked Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
But I had two issues with it. One, it's so rapid fire.
That's true.
That there is no way you can conceivably solve it. Right? These whole things are like, you want to play along.
Mm-hmm.
And this is always my thing. This is why I don't like the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, is because you can't play along. Those mysteries do not exist.
Sure.
They're not real mysteries. They just tell you there is a mystery. And then he strings together a bunch of stuff that you had no way of knowing or deducing.
I do like both those movies, though.
Yeah. The first one was like, okay. And the second one was garbage.
Hey, but that has Lisbeth Salander in it, right? Isn't it?
The second one, I think, for sure does.
But I did not like that they started with Murder on the Orient Express. So,
what's the first book?
I don't even know.
Oh.
But but
it's the most famous though.
But
right?
It's the most famous is why they started with. But the problem is, the solution to Murder on the Orient Express, it's a punchline, right? Like it, and it really ultimately is kind of like lovingly making fun of murder mystery novels,
sure.
right? Like,
sure,
I mean,
sure.
I don't want to say it for people that haven't seen it and spoil it, but I mean, but the solution that they land on, there is no way a person is going to come up with that solution, right? Even though it works and it makes sense and it's kind of funny and you're like, okay, I get it. That it's a great trick, but you can only do it once, right?
Yeah, right.
But you shouldn't start with that one because it kind of rests on the fact that you've read all these Agatha Christie other novels, and this one kind of subverts your expectations by doing the one thing you don't think it could ever do,
right?
And so to use that as a starting point, I thought, was not well conceived. Mm. It should have built up to Murder on the Orient Express. And then the second one, I thought, was just... I didn't like it at all. I thought it was boring.
Yeah.
I thought that it was they had to edit so much around Armie Hammer and that all the weird narrative games they had to play to work around him made it virtually unsolvable. What I like about this one is that it finally calmed down.
That
right?
is true.
Like,
and the cast is much smaller.
Yeah, and like it finally calmed down and actually tells a story in a fairly even straightforward narrative sense, and like you can play along. I feel like someone could watch this movie and with the information presented to you solve the mystery.
Yeah,
probably.
I think it is all there. I didn't see it coming, but I think it's all laid out. If you once they piece it together, you're like, oh yeah, well
that was all there.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like the other two really played fair with the mystery.
The second one,
second one's on the boat, and it's
I know
it's Annette Bening
in Cairo or whatever, but
in Gal Gadot. Yeah.
I don't know who did what. I think Armie Hammer was a bad guy in the end.
Him and his wife did it, or fiance or whatever.
Yeah. That's
like
right.
I don't even remember why, but...
Because he's a cannibal.
Yeah, like Total Coelho. That's you don't even know what I'm talking about.
I thought you were making a joke about Hugh Poirot's name.
No, there was a mild hit in the 80s called I Eat Cannibal.
Oh.
By the band Total Coelho.
Oh, okay.
I Eat Cannibal. It's incredible.
Oh. Yes. And how long was it a hit?
About 14 seconds.
Perfect.
Yeah. So
as long as it takes you to pronounce the name.
That's right. That's right.
But anyway, so like I really ended up enjoying this movie. I get what you're saying about the shots, but
I think it could have been good. Like I like the concept a lot.
Yeah.
And I really love what it does great is someone like Poirot, who's so logical and obviously no nonsense. He picks apart everything and all the evidence. It gets him to actually question what he's seeing and what's going on.
Yeah.
So I love the concept of it. I just think that the budget was so small. And I mean, I know it's not Branagh's fault. He's doing the best he can. But whatever they were doing with all those shots and the way it was filmed, it just looked so bad. And again, not like, oh, this looks like the time period appropriate and like they're trying to do a BBC miniseries, whatever.
But like, you know what? That's what it felt like. This felt like a BBC, like Agatha Christie adaptation. Because I thought the same thing.
But it was like not in a good way. You know, sometimes we're like, oh, I love it when there's the extra grain and it feels period appropriate. There was something about this that looked like it was a handy cam. It looked like
when
not,
there are scenes when he's got it, you know that he's wearing a rig, like he's the camera's facing him and he's like walking around and you know he's wearing like it's one of those shots. I think of I don't know if anybody remembers the show. There was a show on MTV called Fear. Where they would take like a bunch of teenagers. Well, they would put them in like a haunted place and they had to do like challenges
stuff,
or whatever. And they come
like
back.
Fear Factor. But
yeah. And they would all wear like shoulder harnesses and they'd have like
and
camera
they'd be
like,
them around. They'd be in the dark. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there were scenes in this where they were doing the same thing. I was like, man, that is a choice.
What I do like they had some really good ideas. I liked when he was wearing the mask and you could see out the eye holes, kind of Halloween POV.
Yeah.
I liked that. I liked the idea of some of the weird shots, but again, it just something about it was hurting my head. I'm like, it looked bad. Like it was poorly executed, interesting concepts, but I kept being, they would just cut between these shots to shot. And you know what I mean?
I think they're trying to get you to feel disoriented in the way he's feeling disoriented.
That could very well be.
But
I also think Venice is like kind of low key one of my favorite places to like film something. Like it's just so
that's a weird city, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like
why would anyone do that?
I don't know, but it is. It's very weird, and like the you know the buildings are. It doesn't look like anything else. There's nothing else in the world that looks like Venice.
Listen to Mr. Italian over here.
All right, all right, all right. Hey.
I love it to Venice. Hey,
don't do that. Don't do that. You can't do that. I can do that. You can't do that.
Can Mario do that?
Yeah, but not Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
But there, like, I do think it's such a unique place to film something. I don't know if you've, there's this movie called, it's I think it's called, it's Terminator 2 is what they call it. But it's got, but it's definitely a ripoff of Terminator from, it's an Italian flick. I wish I could remember.
Yeah,
it's like Body Shock, I think, or something like that. But they film like they're running through the streets of Venice, and it's
wouldn't they be swimming through the streets?
No, because like, but that's I guess that's true. They're running on the sidewalks of Venice.
Okay, I love the imagery of so like they're like this is like what 1945?
Yeah, some, 40s, no, it's post
World War II. So
because the doctor, because Jamie Dornan is that his name?
Yeah, 1947. Then it was like 45 to 47.
Because he's
46, but
he's got PTSD. Like that's his deal.
Yeah, it's definitely post World War II. I don't if they ever set a ye- an official
do.
Year.
They
I don't
do.
Remember.
I had either to, it's between 45 and 47 for sure. I know it was like mid 40s.
I'm not gonna lie, I missed the first 5 minutes of this movie.
Oh. You gotta do it.
I had a work call. I had a major.
I've been there.
Major show crisis.
Oh no!
And I had to take a work call. So Crystal went in and watched it, and then like fed me what happened.
Hey, can you just record this for me real quick, and I'll watch in the beginning.
Yeah, just let them know you're with the press. It'll be fine. Yeah.
But like. It is interesting to kind of see Brenna kind of do a there were these run of horror flicks that came out of the UK that were not like gore based. They were like ghost based or like a haunted house, like The Haunting or The Haunting of
it's more atmospheric.
Atmospheric, yeah. And this felt like that. And those are all kind of like one set pieces. And they were I think this was really good at again, not really knowing if we're dealing with something supernatural, which you know that we're probably not.
Right.
Because
it's not what these books do.
Yeah, right. But
it's really fun to question. But again, seeing Poirot question it.
Right.
The man who is so logical, he would never believe in these things. And it's really interesting to see he's actually seeing these things, which he would never believe in. And then to find out why, it's clever.
It is clever.
I really do like the idea of it. I liked the atmosphere and the setting.
I love a spooky house.
Yeah.
Spooky. If you do it right, like that's good stuff.
For sure.
So this one starts, we've got, Perot is
Ross Perot.
Yes. Ross Perot.
Yes. Ross
Perot. Can't finish. is out on it. He's just done. He's retired to Venice. He's got this one of my favorite. This has been my favorite character of all of these movies is the Italian bodyguard, where he's just punching people and throwing them over like the bridges. I think it's hilarious. And he's not really taking any cases. And then Tina Fey shows up, who I didn't know was in this movie, and I was like,
"Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't watch it. I don't remember ever seeing a trailer for this.
Yeah,
but I was like, oh, this is okay. Like, I love Tina Fey.
Yeah."
And she basically says, so is she supposed to be Agatha Christie?
Yes. She's kind of like a stand in for Agatha Christie.
Okay. She's this famous crime or mystery writer, and she has made
famous. She wrote a book based on his character. She followed him on a case and then wrote a book, thinly veiled version of him that everybody figured out was him. And then he became very famous, which is why the whole world knows who he is. Yes.
And he has retired from taking
cases.
I think
it's funny that there's all these detective books are about detectives who are very famous when I cannot think of one famous detective in real life.
Elliot Ness.
Was he a detective? He was a cop.
I guess he was a cop.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't detect anything. Who are we kidding? But
not at all.
But like, he wasn't really a detective.
That's
like,
true.
He wasn't out solving mysteries.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know,
just
like,
such a fun concept, though, to think that there's this great detective.
That's true.
Batman, Sherlock Holmes.
Like,
yeah. But like the
Poirot.
Really,
Poirot.
And if you've ever talked to a private investigator. If you've ever talked to a private investigator, and thanks to my first wife, I have frequently, you know, they'll tell you, they're like, this job is so boring. They're
like,
it's just sitting there watching for someone to do something and then going,
click.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah.
You can make a case that Mikael Blomkvist is a detective.
Yeah.
He's a journalist.
Yeah.
But I mean,
he's kind of, about Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Keith Mars.
Columbo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love me some Columbo.
Jessica Fletcher.
Jessica Fletcher. Yeah, that's a good one.
Matlock. I mean, he's a lawyer, but he's also solving.
Perry Mason.
From a narrative standpoint, he functions as a detective. I would also agree with how he's a medical detective.
You mean Sherlock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diagnosis murder.
I got to tell you, it took me too long that he was Sherlock Holmes.
I mean, doesn't he even live at like 221?
Yeah, he's a drug addict.
Yeah.
His name is House instead of Holmes. It's just like, oh, God damn it.
Yeah. Buys all his furniture at Watson's.
I thought it was funny when I figured out that Laurie and Fry were a comedy duo, and I'm like, the guy from House?
Yeah.
Was a comedian? That's really weird.
He does Stuart Little's dad? He does a really good English accent, though.
He does one of the better ones.
You know. Exactly.
So, yeah, she says, like, I've got this case. I need your help. And he's like, no, I'm not doing it. And she kind of goads him with, like, you probably couldn't figure it out anyway. And he's like, all right, fine.
Nobody calls me a chicken.
Right, nobody calls me a chicken. So they go and we find out that she's the wife from Yellowstone. I watch clips every once in a while.
I watched two episodes of Yellowstone because everybody's raving about it. And like halfway through the second episode, I turn to my wife and I'm like, is this complete dog? And she's like, it is complete dog. And I was like, are you cool? I'm like, I don't understand what people love about this show. It's just Dallas, but not as good.
I think that leans a little towards a certain.
I agree. And I don't even begrudge it that.
No.
It just wasn't good. Like, I don't understand. I feel like sometimes people on the right are so desperate for something to tell them that they're correct, right. That they'll glob on to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
like
people that have very different views from you love it. So like the fact that you don't like it doesn't seem
like,
that
and I wasn't
because...
even like, oh my God, this is offending my sensibilities. I was like, this is so boring and cheesy.
Right.
And,
but the stuff it says, apparently they're just like, I don't know what he's defending his ranch or what. I don't know what
I have no idea. I know that Kevin Costner's like the mayor or something.
I know that he makes like $100 million a season or something.
Are you
crazy.
Serious?
Yeah. Oh, he makes so much. Because I think to get him to come do this this show on some streaming network,
Kevin Costner,
back when streaming networks still were throwing money at everything left and right, that they were, you know, they threw a bunch of money at him and he was like, don't mind if I do.
How long am I going to be on set? A week for 17 episodes?
Yeah.
Done.
And then he said he wasn't going to do the new one. It was like he turned on $50 million for the season.
Well, there's like two other ones. There's like a prequel and then there's like...
Oh, yeah, and there's spinoffs. He's a
and
producer.
Harrison Ford's in one of them.
What?
Helen Mirren.
Yeah. And one of the prequel, like the 1883 or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, they were like, well, we got
Sam Elliott in 1883.
Sam Elliott, I'll give you. Sam Elliott, I feel like, will do kind of anything.
And Harrison Ford is in like 1923 or something.
Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren.
I feel like they had... Look, we had 50 million set aside for Costner.
Yeah, we can.
What if we give 25 to Ford, 25 to Mirren?
I still think with the Costner turning it down, it was in the middle of that divorce.
Yeah.
His divorce?
He didn't want that to be a part of it.
Oh.
And so in my head, I was like, he's waiting for that divorce to be final.
Who was he married to?
So she don't get half of it.
Was
he was married to Mrs. Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason I even know all that is because I guess in the court filings, they were fighting over a Peloton.
Oh,
and you have so much money and you're fighting over a bike you can get for like $1,800
or even like, free when you say I ride a Peloton.
Yeah,
right. Like actually Peloton does not give product to social media influencers. They I am not aware of anytime they've given. The only thing they ever gave away was when the guide came out, but the guide was like $400.
Oh,
like,
sure.
But in terms of like the real pieces of equipment, bike, tread, row, I am unaware of them ever giving them to social media influencers.
Well, he wouldn't want to accept anything free anyway, right? He wants to pay for it.
Who's the mom in Sky High?
Is this the same person?
That's who I thought was his wife.
This is Kelly Riley is the mom, the main character.
Oh, no. I meant like Kevin Costner's wife.
Oh, I don't know.
I wish I could remember that gal's name. No. It doesn't matter.
But anyway, so yeah, Kelly Riley is the mom, and it's been it's a year to the day of her daughter's death, and apparently the daughter was seeing spirits, and this house is haunted. They do a little play with puppets and stuff, which looks pretty
cool. I
gotta
tell you, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it was a cool play.
I like that Kenneth, I'm not gonna say his name because I suck at it. Kenneth Brenna is like, are you sure this is all right for kids? I'm like, this is a little much. But it reminded me of Candyman.
The remake of Candyman, sure. They did something very similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They did kind of the shadow puppet thing. Yeah,
Austin
yeah.
Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yeah, that's a very different shadow game.
Dead Men Tell No Tales. Ooh, he was doing shadow
That's right,
puppets,
he was, yeah.
And Pee Wee Herman.
R.I.P. Yeah. Yeah. And basically this they do like this Halloween party for the kids. And then once that's done, they were going to hold a seance with the last woman alive who was sentenced to prison for being a witch, which is Michelle Yeoh in this movie.
And I missed that part.
Yeah.
That's her backstory.
Yeah. She's like the last woman. And she was released because they're all like, yeah, we kind of screwed that up. Sorry about that. and then she parlayed that into this medium kind of gimmick where she has, you know, and I do love that. So she does the whole thing.
He does. I was talking to someone at the theater about this. Knives Out is so good. And the second Knives Out is so good.
Yes.
And now you watch these movies, even though they were the original stories.
Well,
Knives Out's done it so well.
There were a couple beats of this that were, I felt very similar to,
Glass Onion.
Right.
The guy getting invited to the party that wasn't really invited.
Guessing how everything was done.
Completely just picks apart everything at the beginning. Yeah.
And now you're just like, man, Rian Johnson's done it so well that it's like the
back
student
to back.
Has become the master.
Yeah, back to back.
And these movies are having a hard time standing up to those because I'll tell you what, I love those two Knives Out movies.
They're fantastic. Right?
I also have to put a plug in here for Poker Face on Peacock. If you have not watched Poker Face,
that's the
Natasha
Lyonne show.
Have you watched?
I have. I watched the first three episodes.
Yeah, it is so damn good.
I need to watch it.
It is like next.
That's also Rian Johnson, right?
Yes. Yeah. Which is why she's in Glass Onion.
Oh.
When they're doing a Zoom and it's all people who are like detectives, right? Like
Private Eyes or something.
Yeah, like Kareem Abdul. Because Angela Land.
Abdul-Jabbar's in there?
Yeah. Isn't he one of them?
I think so.
He has written some mystery novels,
which I
didn't realize. And then Angela Lansbury's in there because of Jessica Fletcher. And then Natasha Leone's in there. But Poker Face had not come out yet. But the two of them were working on Poker Face together.
Okay.
So he put her on the Zoom call.
So wait.
And Stephen Sondheim, right?
Yeah.
Are we saying that the Jessica Fletcher is in the Glass Onion? No,
she's playing Angela Lansbury.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought she was playing Jesse Fletcher.
Who have connection to murder mystery type of stuff.
I was like, that
things.
Would be insane.
Yeah.
And great at the same time. Yeah. So he comes in and she starts doing the whole gimmick and he immediately is like, hey, dummy. And like reaches up under the fireplace and like pulls one of the guys, you know, one of her little minions out who's got like a magnet that's making this typewriter like type things
and
out.
I do like it's kind of creepy and good atmosphere with the typewriter boom slamming down the
letters.
And Michelle Yeoh's like really selling what's going on, and it, you know, you're into it, but then
she does not phone it in for a 1 day contract.
No way.
Got to give her that.
Yeah, she is. This is the part where I was like, maybe we are doing something kind of weird. And then, because I had watched Talk to Me before I watched this, and I was like, okay, maybe.
I did it the other way around, so.
No, not a bad idea.
Yeah.
She starts spinning in the middle of this room, and she's like messing with her face, and I was like, Jesus Christ, like maybe this is something supernatural.
How is the spinning happening? That was weird.
They don't explain that.
Yeah, because I would like to know. Everything else is explained, and I don't like that she's spinning rapidly.
She's
it's
just
like,
with her foot. You just can't see it.
I would like to know at least.
She's on an office chair.
Yeah.
She's an office chair.
So Brenna puts it together immediately. And as he's talking to her later, you know, he's kind of calling her out. And he's saying, you did this. Here's your two assistants, set you all up here. She does have a moment where she's like, smooth. Will you also shut up and let me collect my money, please?
Yeah. I forget what they ask him, but there is a point where they're like, well, how did she do this? And he's like, look, I can't necessarily pick apart every individual thing, but like...
It had to be the spinning thing.
But he's like, it's clearly BS.
Yes. It's clearly...
I just love how... I really love how Branagh plays this character, you know, and I think it's hard when you're directing. That would be a tough to like make these choices
Talk
and
about
not have work. People.
Although I will also say he's been doing that his entire career.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Like, I mean, his very first film he directed and starred in.
He's very talented in that.
Dead Again, which you've not seen, is a delight.
Yes.
But I think it's very talented, that the way he plays Poirot, I like the way he carries himself, and how he just seems bored by things.
Yes.
Because they're so easy to figure out, and you believe it. You're like, this guy's so good.
Yeah.
He does not care.
He is world weary.
Benoit Blanc is kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Like, in the... halfway through,
like, nonchalant. I like how Benoit Blanc is laid back and he's doing it all in his mind, but he's just like a goofball. But he's like, oh yeah, and by the way, blah 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 blah. I know.
But you know, he has moments of excitement though. But he does have that kind of like, oh my god, this is what you're doing,
you dummy. Like I've already
angry though, like when people are doing stuff, which I like too.
No, I think in both of those movies, he gets to like 3/4 of the way through, and he thinks he's stumped. And then like something clicks, and he's like, "Ah, I got it."
Yeah.
So all this is going on, and then I believe like there's a storm of brewing, and the power goes out, I think, and then
so Michelle Yeoh tells Poirot like to just, well, you know,
kiss off.
No, she's just kind of like, you don't believe this, but you know there are things that you can't explain and weird things, and she puts a cloak and a mask on him.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right.
And then he walks around with it, and you get some of those, I think, some interesting point of view shots from Poirot, and he goes to Bob Apples because he's like, oh, we'll do something.
One of those apples looked rotten to the, I was like, don't put your mouth on that one. That's gross. And as he's doing that, he gets clubbed in the back of the head and pushed into the water. And then the cop shows up and pulls him out of the water, and he spits up grossness. They're trying to figure it out. And then while all that's going on, all of a sudden, Michelle Yeoh, in a pretty, like, I thought it was pretty dope, like a pretty good little death scene, gets thrown onto a statue and lands and like
impaled
with the hand. And I was like, well, that's oof.
You
that's
don't tough. Really see it happen though. Is this PG-13?
I think so.
It's gotta be, right?
Yeah.
Right. Cause that's what I mean. Like there are some interesting kills, but like it's in a shadow. You see the shadow falling on a thing, which doesn't quite hit as hard. You know, like I get what they were trying to do. Cause like, we got to make every dollar that we can with this thing. But I do think that if maybe you know, it doesn't have to be super gory, but like,
I don't know, man, you get impaled on a statue. It's going to be kind of gory.
Have you seen Hot Fuzz?
Mean,
but the whole movie doesn't have to be super gory, but I do think it kind of lessens the impact. Like that could be really shocking if you saw her do it in, not in a shadow. You know? So it maybe didn't hit as hard. But yeah, you see that and you're like, well, crap. Like that was unexpected.
What was the, man, there is a, oh no, it's in Talk. We'll get to it on the next episode. But in Talk to Me, there's a scene where I was like, holy. So now Perot's like, I got you. Like now we got something cooking, and he starts trying to piece it all together. He goes and looks at the body, but is it Jamie? What's his name? Jamie Dornan.
Fifty Shades.
Sure, I haven't seen anything
from Barb and Star Go to Del Mar.
Barb and Star Go to what's it called?
Barb and Star Go to Del Mar.
Isn't there another word?
Vista
in there?
Del Mar.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. And he's not. I guess he's like the family doctor. Is kind of the way I took that. He's like a private.
He's like a non-practicing doctor.
He only works for the family. I feel like.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He's a doctor, but he's a garbage doctor because he has PTSD and he can't get it together. And he's got this son who is creepy AF. Mm. The entire time I was like, well, that's him. Like, that's the killer because he's just creepy.
Every time they filmed the sun, they did a weird camera angle.
That's what I'm saying.
Which I think is maybe on purpose and it's foreshadowing.
Like a cinematic red hair.
It was, but I was just like, it's so weird.
But
it's,
he is weird. I mean, he ends up being the one who's blackmailing the family. So like, he is doing something nefarious. He just isn't killing people.
For sure. But man, I guess
Kenneth Branagh must really like this kid.
I guess.
Because that's the kid from Belfast.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Which was directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Got it. So Jamie Dornan messes up the autopsy. He misses a broken wrist. He misses the time of death. And now,
how do you miss time of death in a murder mystery? Because they always smash their watch.
I know. Like it's always like
every time a clock breaks to establish the time of death.
That seems to conveniently work so well.
Yeah.
Well, you got to know when it happened.
I mean, can't the glass break on a watch without it stopping? Like it always.
And how do you know that when it took that impact, it didn't move one of the hands?
That's or also, how do you know it wasn't broken before?
Yeah, it's just.
How do you know it didn't have a battery or it wasn't wound or it's, whatever?
Well, yeah, like, because if you were in a court of law, that's what you would say as a defense attorney. Yeah. But in a narrative structure, they're trying to like give you like here's a clue to establish a hard fact: the person died at 12:15.
Got it.
Right? Like it's like that's really what that's about. It's just a narrative concept.
I just always am like, it took an impact. That means that the little delicate hands, you know how flimsy those hands are in a watch? If it took an impact.
Well, not people with this kind of money.
Oh, that's true. Those are very
Those are like stainless steel things. So now the game is afoot, if you will.
And he's locking all the doors.
You're getting your
detective. Oh, yeah, they're stuck there till the next day. Didn't that happen in Glass Onion? They couldn't rescue them?
Yeah, they couldn't get off the island. Yeah.
So there's that convention. Like, we just saw a lot of this, which felt very weird. This also reminded me of Clue. Is Clue a parody of this? Because
it's
this
a parody
movie
of,
so many
of an Agatha Christie
novel.
Of Agatha Christie mysteries
in
general.
But this one, particularly, like the other
I don't think so, and okay. I only say that because I know that this, while this movie is based on Halloween Party, it's like... very loosely based on Halloween.
Oh, as in there's a party and it's Halloween.
Yes, there's a party and it's Halloween and somebody dies.
Okay.
And it's Venice.
But this felt like maybe Brandon enjoys Clue. Because
when all of them would run to different rooms.
Yeah. Because like the murderer in the book, I don't even think is a character in this movie.
Oh, weird.
So like it's like if you're an Agatha Christie fan and you're wanting to see an adaptation of Halloween Party.
You're going to be pissed.
You are going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
An Aghead?
Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
Trademark that right now. That's ours.
I don't know that there's a lot of value to locking in Agatha Christie related IPs. Call me crazy.
Hey, if we can get one.
Based on the box office of this
film. No joke. No,
maybe the merch will make more than the movie.
In their defense, slow time of year for films, and no one's allowed to do any press. Yeah.
That's a good point. This on that subject, because this movie's boring.
Well, you got 20 minutes.
When does, like... They're going to run out of stuff.
I know. Like, we're going to be going back to doing Misbegotten sequels.
I know. So, like...
I can't just not pay people.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I feel bad for the people that aren't working and making money.
For
but
sure,
like,
in the short term.
Run,
but in the long term, like, the deal that they want these actors and writers to make is ridiculous.
Pennies. If you look at the streaming residuals, people are showing their checks and everything.
Yeah.
And they're like, this thing is the number one blah, blah, blah on Netflix. Whatever. I made 6 cents.
Yeah. There was somebody that...
Aaron Paul said
he hasn't made
anything from the streaming of Breaking Bad on Netflix. He's not made
that's
one
insane.
Penny. And like it used to be the residuals from reruns is what kept you afloat. Yeah. Well, nobody is really showing reruns on terrestrial TV in the same way anymore. And so it's all going to everybody's moving to streaming and they're basically like, well, we don't got to pay you for that.
Yeah, like, it's such a
that's the dominant model, well, then you need to pay people.
Right. Like, think about how popular Breaking Bad is, and especially because of Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's not playing on regular TV. Like, you need to make your money. You need residuals.
I wonder if people are going to be, because A24 signed the deal. They're like, yeah, man, whatever you want to do.
All these small ones are
doing
it.
You got it.
All these ones can do it somehow, but the big ones that make
We're going to get Avatar 3 produced by A24.
Yeah.
But I just
it's
wonder.
It's going to be James Cameron with puppets.
Oh, that makes that movie so much more interesting is to watch that. But I'm curious as to like, when is it gonna, I wonder if they're gonna go back to the vault for stuff that they've already filmed, but not like, did you know what,
maybe we'll see Batgirl.
I know. Did you know Salem's Lot was made and done?
No.
It's finished. It's already done. They finished it a year ago in 2021 and they just shelved it and it's just sitting there, which means it's gonna suck. Which sucks for me because that's my favorite one.
All right, so back to this one. So what we keep doing is they keep flashing back to. So the way the daughter died, she was seeing visions. She was very out of it. And we're led to believe that she went to her balcony and jumped off into the water.
Correct.
And drowned. And you keep seeing the mom, like, looks like she's like holding her, trying to pull her out of there, whatever. And you keep flashing back to the scene. So we don't really know what's up, but in the spooky, are there really ghosts and things? Apparently, like, this house used to be an old children's hospital or something.
Yeah, I think so.
The kids are like coming back in that little story to the nurses and the doctors killing them because they didn't save them.
Right.
And so now the ghosts are haunting this place and they terrorize the daughter and
they go after the stories. They go after nurses and doctors. And I do like the scene where Brenna's like, have you found the basement? And I'm like, there is no basement to this place. And he just walks over to a wall and kicks the door in. He's like, there it is. Found it. But I do like this part because they go down into the basement and there are cages and things down there. So you're also kind of like, maybe, I don't know. But we do like now Kenneth Branagh is starting to hear a child singing or somebody, he sees a shadow and he's trying to chase in the shadows.
He's hearing things and everyone's looking at him like you're crazy, but also he's been hit in the head. Right. So you're starting to wonder, is he, and you're leaning towards you, of course, like, there's something going on, right? I mean, it's very Scooby-Doo. It's very who's pulling the tricks? Who's doing the stuff?
Right.
Someone's playing a not a record, but what would be an old timey
a Victrola?
A Victrola is what I'm looking
for. Which is just a record. But
someone,
go on.
Right, but someone's playing a Victrola with the daughter recorded singing or something.
But I do. But also, something. I like the scene that I did like that I thought was really spooky. Is he sees this little girl like running, and he sees
it when it becomes the ring.
Kind of. Yeah. Right.
Ringu,
which is also, I gotta tell you, super creepy.
I just thought that was Japanese. Ragu. Meat sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know where that was going to go. That was going to be interesting.
You're like, oh no.
You can buy all sorts of things from those vending machines.
That's true. That's
the old
that's
guy.
True.
Is he about to say something racist? Have we hit that point in his age cycle?
Yeah, we're just kind of like, come on.
Yeah.
You know better.
You know how grandpa is.
Yes, exactly.
It was
right.
a different
yes.
time.
Yeah, right. But the original Grudge, Ju-on, terrifying. Yeah. That original one was terrifying.
There was a minute there where all those Japanese horror movies were getting remade into American versions.
One Missed Call, The Ring, The Grudge. Yeah, all that stuff kind of blew up.
Oppenheimer? No.
That's a different kind of horror story.
It is a Japanese horror story. Yeah.
Was Sarah Michelle Gellar in the remake?
Was in the remake of that one, and Naomi Watts was in the other one. But there is actually, there's a Ring versus The Grudge?
No.
Yes.
Wow.
That's a real thing.
Like a movie?
Yeah. But not in America. It was a Japanese movie.
Versus Predator, versus Alien, versus Batman.
Yes.
Versus Crocodile Dundee.
Yes.
There was a period of time when they were actively pitching Beverly Hills Cop meets Crocodile Dundee.
Okay.
They were good.
Remember there was Men in Black in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
That was almost a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That would have been fun.
Maybe.
I think it could have been with the Lord Miller.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, that would have been fascinating. If it had been good, it would have been great. If it had been bad, it would have been great.
It would have been, right?
It would have just been such a, like, what are we even looking
at?
Yeah,
right. Unlike that reboot that we got for Men in Black that was not good.
Yeah.
So Poirot's going around. Tina Fey, like, has a semi-alibi. Says, okay, you come around with me and help question. So he's doing the thing where he interrogates everybody and tries to get, where were you? I was in this room when this happened, this, that. You know, it just goes through a bunch of that.
Yeah.
That you do in all these
St.
movies.
St. Louis is in this movie.
No, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
I remember they wanted to go to Missouri.
They want to go to Missouri, but they watched the first half of Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh, yes. That's funny.
Yeah. And that got a weird laugh in the theater.
Oh, like, for sure. When they said, we're going to send you to Missouri or whatever, people were like, ah,
you dummies.
Yeah.
Sucker. The two other people in the theater. Yeah, they're
like, you're so dumb. We don't like foreigners. I mean, the white one's okay.
Yeah. Well, you, buddy.
But the guys got to go.
Yeah.
Why not? This is Missouri, man.
Well, it depends.
We don't.
What part of Missouri you're in, you know?
All parts.
That's true.
Yeah.
But then the detective's like, okay, I know the score. Like, I know you want to talk to me. And this is where we find out that
talk to me is a different.
That is a different. Yeah. Tina Fey and this detective have been in on this the entire time. First, we find out that the detective was the first on scene. He gives us actually a really good story about how sometimes a cop can reach a point where he's like, that's it. Like, you've reached your limit. In the words of Jim Ross, he met his limit on his bump card. You just can't take any more bumps, and that's it. Your career is over.
Is that a ding?
That
ding?
Is a ding.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I was like, I have no idea. I'm like, is that a police officer?
Jim Ross is probably.
It's okay.
Fair enough. basically, a wrestler.
14 minutes.
Yeah.
Basically, a wrestler can only take so many hits, and that's it.
Gotcha.
So once your bump card's full, you're done.
Okay.
And this detective is like, I worked a case, and I couldn't get past it, and I had to retire. And we find out that the case that he was working was this girl's case,
like the daughter who
died,
drowned,
couldn't figure it out. And it sounds like Tina Fey was kind of pissed at Kenneth Branagh because her last few books kind of tanked.
Right, she's in a slump,
and I can't. Did she?
Because he's not solving mysteries, she can base.
Is that kind of what that was? That's what I kind of thought she was trying to say.
I thought since he retired that she didn't have inspiration. Or he wasn't popular.
I didn't hear it that way. Although I don't necessarily think that's wrong. I heard it more as like, she just kind of wanted to go back to what worked.
Oh, sure.
Like,
sure,
she had written other books, but then she'd been in a slump, and she's like, "Well, people, this is the book that made me famous, so let me go back to that."
Mm. That makes sense.
That's how I heard it, but I'm not convinced.
But
that
her goal was to stump Kenneth Branagh. That was if I can write a book about the greatest detective of all time being stumped on a case and giving into the idea that the occult, not the occult, but like the supernatural is real, this is going to change everything. And of course, Kenneth Branagh figures it out, and he was like, we're done.
You're cool.
Yeah. Well, we haven't gotten to that part yet. That's kind of what he says to the kid.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yeah, you'll be all right.
So Poirot is surprisingly like chill sometimes with people. You know what I mean? Like, he's so about the law. And then I feel like in the last, like, I feel like in every movie he kind of does this.
Well, in this one,
he's just kind of like, eh, you're good. We don't really have to, eh, you're good.
Yeah, the end of this one.
And Murder on the Orient Express at the end, he's kind of like, you know, the guy kind of deserved killing. Like, it's the good old-fashioned Texas he needed killing defense.
Yeah,
like,
right.
But, like, he, until the end of that first one, which I know that was the first movie, but, like, the whole first movie, he's like, no, if you did something,
justice you're must be right. served.
And then after that, he kind of like
and then he's
lightens
like,
up a little bit.
That guy was kind of a like.
But at the end of this
end of
one,
the second one, I think he's kind of like, that was Army Hammer.
Yeah, he's like, well, look at the guy. Yeah, you know, we all know. But he does say the detective is like, I guess we're gonna go to jail. I guess
he says like, in the daylight, it does not seem that is necessary.
Well, it's twofold, right? Like, I'm going to go to jail or I'm going to either way. He's like, no, it's a wash. Like, you go your way, I'll go my way. Thank
of course
you
it's a wash. It's finished. There's so much water.
So much water everywhere. While all of that is going and he figures all of this out, we know that Jamie Dornan has had a panic attack basically. And his son has been like this anchor for his dad where he
gives him his meds.
Or even just like talks him off the cliff because when he goes after the boyfriend, which I thought was a really good scene.
It's called parentification, and it's ill-advised. And yes. It's a shame when parents do that to their children.
That is correct.
Well, and then they
not
start
that I've
writing,
watched it happen.
blackmail letters and all sorts.
Well, I will say, Jamie Dornan might make a pretty good Batman. He's young enough. I think he's in the right age range. And he had moments of like pretty good intensity in this
better
one.
Bulk up.
That's true. Yeah.
So what CGI is for.
Or a suit.
Yeah.
You know. But he has this panic attack. They lock him in this soundproof room and then they come back after everything's figured out and he's dead.
He's dead.
He did. And now they've got to figure out like how the hell did this happen? So what we find out is that I'm trying to think. Oh, they're talking to the boyfriend and the boyfriend like cuts his finger on a knife and he grabbed.
Who's the boyfriend? I'm not recalling. Who do you guys.
It was the daughter's ex boyfriend.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Sorry. He's the one who got the card.
Oh, Mr. Herring.
Yes. Correct. Mr. Red Herring.
R Herring. Yeah. R Herring. Yes. They just used R to not make it obvious.
When he looks at the note and he's like,
rich jerk boyfriend who now has moved on so quickly and all that. He must
also
be the killer.
But also he looks at, and I don't know if it's like.
Who gained nothing from her death.
Yeah. Nothing.
Right? Like, it's not like they were married and he got an inheritance.
Why would he do that?
Yeah.
But also there's this, so they're talking to this guy and he's like, can I see the invitation that you got? And he puts it down and he looks at it and the word apple kind of lights up when he's looking at the print on the thing. And I thought, is he telling
us to invest in Apple stock?
Well, that's what I'm just like, is he saying that he
wanted an iVictrola.
Don't put that in the universe. That will be a thing. But is he like, did he look at the note and real and just saw the word Apple and was like, hey,
yeah, it's not like a secret code that was implanted,
right.
Which is what I thought they were saying at first. Cause I was like, how would you ever pick
how
that?
How'd you put that together?
It's not like it's the first letter of every word or something.
It's like just random letters.
You could do that in any sentence, you know? And he says, there's a line he says later where he's like, my subconscious brain starts to see what it needs to see.
Okay.
Like to say, like, here's what you should be like somewhere deep down. I've already started formulating the answer and my brain picks it out.
It's like a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically it was a plot device.
Yes. So we'll just wrap this up. Basically what happens is the mom who is obsessed with her daughter. It's Munchausen, right? Munchausen by proxy?
By proxy, yeah.
So she has been...
They don't call it that anymore, for the record.
They don't?
No.
Is that offensive?
No, they gave it a more medical
the
name.
They...
Yeah. You son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Basically
the
what happens...
The Lollipop Guild got
they
the
took
lawyered
They took offense to
and...
it. Yeah, right, right. The mom has... she doesn't want to lose her daughter. The daughter is engaged to this very charismatic American chef. The daughter is going to leave. And to prevent that, the mom... digs up all of the flower garden.
It's now called Fictitious Disorder Imposed on Another.
Oh, that rolls right off the
right up. But yeah. It is more accurate than the other one.
Yeah.
So she plants these flowers that have poisonous honey. Like that's the deal. And we find this
or
out.
Does she make the honey with the flowers in them? I don't think the flowers have honey. Flowers don't make honey.
Oh no, no, no! But it's puts the
flowers
pollen.
In them to
into the honey into because it, yeah. We find out there's a scene earlier
good
where the
honey flowers,
honeysuckles. Yeah.
She grew 800 like, million.
Yeah. He's like, honeysuckles, what's your retort now, botanist?
Got you.
You know what they say? You can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
That's a pretty good one.
But the guy, the boyfriend cuts his finger, and Kenneth Branagh's like, hey, use that honey. It's a natural, like, sedative or it's a glue
antibiotic. Yeah,
like and he tastes it and he was like, this isn't regular honey. And then somebody said earlier, he's like, oh, I found that honey in the towel cabinet.
Yeah.
And it's like,
my wife was like, thumbs up with the honey.
Yeah.
So we find out that she has been using this honey to keep her daughter sick. Yeah, basically. But Kenneth Branagh has been taking the honey at a lower rate through like
it will poison you in enough, but with lower dosage it causes you to hallucinate.
Correct.
Which is why she was hearing the voices. It's also why Perot's been having these visions, because she's been spiking his tea.
Right.
So I like the misdirect of like, well, he was hit in the head, so is he right. Same things, but it's like, oh no, he was dosed with the same stuff.
And we find out it's the mom. The mom was poisoning the daughter. And there was this other, like, this woman who was a nun who was also, like, part of this house. And the daughter was having a fit, and this woman had seen the mom, like, give her this tea. So she was just like, oh, I gotta give her the tea. And she gave her way too much of the honey, and it killed her.
Yeah.
So then
the mom faked her suicide. Correct. Because she didn't want someone to do an autopsy and find out she was poisoned.
Right.
So it's like, oh, she jumped, but she really threw her off
the thing. And of course, the doctor is so messed up that he just kind of misses everything and just rules it a suicide.
But the son is super smart.
Right.
And put all his dad's notes together as he was going through them, and he figured it out, and he's like, well, I'm going to see if this works, and I'm going to test my theory. And he sent a blackmail letter, and she started paying it. So he's like, oh. So he's like, I didn't even know what to do with the money. We paid the bills, and I had so much left.
I like that line. He was like, I had so much left.
And Perot was talking to her earlier, and she's like, I don't have any money left. And he's like, and then he and Tina Fey were like, where did the money go? She's rich. And
right. You know, why is this house not fixed? Why is stuff like that?
Spent it all in Victrolas.
That's yeah.
I Victrolas.
Right.
She was an early adopter.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so she, you know, she brings in Michelle Yeoh, and she thinks that she is the one who is the blackmailer. But she accidentally hits Kenneth Branagh because Kenneth Branagh's wearing the same outfit that Michelle Yeoh was wearing.
Those conveniences are kind of annoying.
A little bit.
When you put, here, sir, put on this cloak. Here, Mr. No-Nonsense, put on this cloak and mask. Would Poirot not go, what the hell is this? Throw it on the ground. Like, the fact that he's like, oh, I will wear this outfit. Like,
I bob for the apple.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Like, that is stupid.
While I have
to
a
me.
Rare moment of whimsy.
Yeah, it's like, that's not his character whatsoever. Yeah,
also,
when she puts it on him, the first thing Pro would go, get this on it. Like,
but you also know, he's not sticking that mustache in water.
No. I know. Because
absolutely not.
First thing I thought of was, what's the mustache going to look like? What?
It came out perfect.
Yeah. No, it was a little messed up.
Oh, was it?
But yeah.
It's just wax.
But I was like, I know, but I'm like, it's going to mess up his mustache for the whole movie.
I gotta
is he going to go, hold on, please, 2 hours later, he comes out.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. I got to tell you. It's a hell of a mustache.
You can tell the budget's been cut.
Every movie it gets less impressive.
Even the mustache is smaller. Yeah.
But it has layers, which is a very impressive feature.
That first
feature.
One when it was a three-part spike and he had the holder for
yes.
it.
Oh yeah, so good.
It was back when they had money for CGI.
Well.
You think a CGI mustache?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I was going to say. Yeah. That's Henry Cavill.
It's Henry Cavill. Yeah. They should have used him instead of Armie Hammer.
That's right. I should have. From now on.
Was he in one of these movies or no?
No. Which is like kind of shocking.
This is the first one that hasn't had someone with a sex scandal. So they're doing
okay. Wait, who was the first one?
Johnny Depp was the victim in the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was kind of the setup, is that you get a big famous person in the opening that gets killed, and then that's, you know, they need him for a day. And
he thought he was a victim in his real life, too.
Yeah. Nice stunt casting.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, they figure it all out. It's the mom. She's done everything. And then, you know, as things are getting wrapped up, the mom ends up trying to, does she just fall over the balcony?
It gets kind of well, is there something going on? Because Poirot sees the ghost of the daughter, and then she slips off, but it kind of looks like...
That's kind of a cool scene, where, like, the ghost of the daughter, like, is floating in the background.
Yes, and then when she goes in the water, it could be, like, her vision, because she's falling.
The daughter's pulling her down.
But the daughter's pulling her into the water to keep her drowned. Like, there was some cool imagery there, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's
and then they it. Wrap and then, they wrap it up.
But
and
he
then,
lets the kid go. You know, he figures out.
Well, he says that he's like, hey, I didn't know what to do all that money. He's like, I got to know what you can do with that money. You can give it to these two.
Send them to St. Louis.
Send them to St. Louis.
Well, also, I'm like, he's took all this money and they're like, we'll find a good use for it. Here, we bought you a ticket.
Like, yeah.
That's literally, she's like, I'll keep the rest. We're going to get you a ticket. It's like, he has so much money. And I thought they were going to go, oh, we're going to donate to the children's orphanage.
No.
Their solution. No, they're like, we'll buy you a plane ticket.
The rest we're keeping.
And when you land, you're on your own.
Right. I'm just like, I thought that was such a funny solution to.
And he and Tina Fey, he's just like, I don't like you no mo. And she's like, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
And basically, he's like,
because she was in cahoots with
the whole time
with the psychic.
And the cop,
yeah,
like, all of it.
Like it
was she cuts with the psychic? I thought they really did.
I think
like
it was all three of them together.
Yeah, they were like she was doing. She brought in the psychic to trick him,
right?
Like she was always trying. She was in on the tricks because she was actually helping operate some of the other things,
the Baba or whatever.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, which is a shame because I liked those two together. So I was like, oh, if they make another one, I'd like to see her back.
Because
she added kind of a modern sensibility.
She was his home or his Watson.
Yeah, like I enjoyed those two together.
Yeah, that was they were same.
Yeah.
So but in the beginning of this movie that Poirot has like a line of people trying to solve cases. And given the fact that he has now solved this case, he's got the mojo back. And at the first, you know, usually he closes the door to his place, but this time he leaves it open. And the guy we see in the beginning, he's like, somebody's trying to kill me. And of course he figures it out. Like he just reads the notes. He's like, by the way, you're going to die. Get it together. And that's kind of how this one ends. I think I like this more than Death on the Nile. It was an interesting like horror. No, I like this one more than that one. That one is such a mess. That one is that Death on the Nile is a mess of a movie.
I wish that maybe this one came next and could have had a better budget because I just think they're so restricted. And you know, hats off for them for having the smaller budget and it being.
What was the budget on this? Did it go back to 55?
It was 60.
Oh, okay.
So the first one was 55, and now what? 8 years later, it's 60.
Okay, yeah. Okay, and that tracks. Then
things cost more now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting like horror, not even horror, just spooky.
But it had those elements.
It was a spooky movie.
Yeah,
I like the change in tone, and it was interesting. I mean, even if I didn't think it was like the best, I think murder mysteries are fun. So
I do.
I'm up for it. You know.
When they don't take themselves too seriously and they tell a good story, I think they're one of my favorite forms of filmmaking.
I wonder if he'll make another one. I wonder if this is it.
My guess is based on the box office, this is probably it.
Unless a streamer picks it up and can, you know, make it a streaming and pay no only one? Type thing.
Yeah.
But you mean a fourth movie?
Yeah. I wonder if it will eventually become a streaming thing.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like these might work better as a miniseries, like a three part miniseries, maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah potentially. So. But I liked it. Like I said, I thought it was my favorite of the three. I thought it was the first one that you could actually play along with, which to me is such a key component of these sorts of stories.
Oh, we forgot to say that Jamie Dornan kills himself.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I forgot about that. Backed into a knife because basically the mom threatened. She's like, I got your son right here.
She's like, you're the one blackmailing me. If you don't kill yourself, I'm going to kill your kid. And he was like, got it.
And he's like, okay, I guess so. So
I'll run back first into the sword.
Anyway, I guess... there's that.
There you go.
So I want to back up and with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I looked it up.
Yeah.
So there were three written by Stieg Larsson, and then there are three more written by David Lagercrantz. Mm-hmm. He wrote The Girl in the Spider's Web, which the one that they turn into a movie.
Yep.
And then The Girl Who Takes an Eye for an Eye, and then The Girl Who Lived Twice. And then there's another... one written, The Girl in the Eagle's Talons.
Interesting.
Written by Karen Smirnoff. And that came out in 2022. But I think that's supposed to be the first of another trilogy.
Okay. Okay.
So
Elizabeth Salander's a detective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 So anyway, it's just, great, but yeah, they're certainly like doing everything they can to keep that alive. Yeah. So I have not read any of them.
The first
so.
Three are good.
I've seen the Swedish stuff, and those movies are good.
No, yeah, man.
The Fincher one's good.
Yeah.
Did not really care for whatever that.
Claire Flory, I can't remember what her name is, but she's, it's not Kate Mara. No, Rooney Mara. Rooney Mara plays her in the Fincher one.
Yeah.
And then they recast her in this new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But who was the original one?
Noomi Rapace.
Noomi Rapace. Yeah, she was so good in that.
I think Fede Alvarez directed that Girl in the Spider's Web.
Oh.
The guy that did Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find
us. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and check out Circle of Wizards.
Yeah.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. And of course, don't forget our Patreon at patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Ransom did it.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.